my gosh, Kimiko, look over there! It's the Leaf Street Boys!
What? Really? You're Josh and me, right?
Oh my god, oh my god, oh my god! It's Matt! It's really Matt! What was that for?
You were getting hysterical.
Hey, ladies.
Oh, somebody get water, a fan, and some Leaf Street Boys memorabilia. I think she just fainted.
Welcome to the Anime Addicts Anonymous Session 11.
Yuri the Only One, which is an original work by the Leaf Street Boys. Speaking of the Leaf Street Boys, our guest of honor today is Matt Myers, the lead singer. Say hi, Matt.
Hey.
You can find us at aaapodcast.com or on iTunes or a bunch of other places.
Mevio.
Or Mevio.
Facebook. YouTube.
Yeah. Mitsugi says it.
Yes, I am Mitsugi, the one and only.
And we also have Kimiko with us today.
Nice to see you guys again, or talk to you guys again, since I can't really see you.
I'm Hatake, of course.
Of course.
Of course.
And as an interesting tidbit, I know that we've been going on and on about it for like 4 weeks, but the post-crossover between the Gundam podcast and the Anime Addicts Anonymous is finally half over. I went on the Gundam podcast last week. It was a lot of fun, and I think it's episode 40 for them, so you can look out for it. And we discussed sci-fi horror and how the two genres blend, you know, very smoothly to create, you know, your worst nightmare.
Something like that.
Yeah. And we also have a new forum member, Leader, and
yay!
Welcome to the forum.
Welcome.
You're always welcome.
Okay, well, start in the news articles, I suppose. Mitsugi, you want to start us off with yours?
There was a really interesting news article this week that kind of piqued my interest because I am a fan of the Dot Hack series, and a lot of people really hate Dot Hack because it's got a lot of talking in it, but Namco Bandai Games announced at the Tokyo Game Show on Thursday that a full CG anime project will tie into its Dot Hack Link action role-playing game. So what's going to happen is that there's going to be a Japanese PSP game coming out, and then later they'll work on the North American release. So we can expect a new Dot Hack game for the PSP, and also later there's supposed to be a Dot Hack anime coming out, also Dot Hack Link, and also a manga is being released in the future. So this is supposed to be the last installment of the Dot Hack series. Bandai has done pretty much all the Dot Hack animes over the past couple years, and there's actually already like 7 Dot Hack games.
7?
Well, the one everybody knows is Dot Hack Sign, and that's because it was on Cartoon Network.
Yeah. I actually watched some of that.
And then there was Dot Hack Legend of the Twilight, which pretty much no one's seen, I think.
Heard the music, though. Oh, the music for all of Dot Hack is just gorgeous.
Yes, I Chi Yu Ake is a really good song.
Oh, same people who do Tsubasa Chronicles did Dot Hack.
Yes, that's why it's so good.
You can kind of tell, I think.
I love Tsubasa. Oh, yeah.
But, so you guys can look forward to your next and last fix of the Dot Hack series. So those of you that like it will probably rejoice and be very upset right about now. So,
moving on.
There was also some news regarding the Cowboy Bebop movie. I think Matt has that article. So I've been hearing about that for a while. What do you have for us?
A live-action Cowboy Bebop in the writing, starring none other than The Matrix and Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure's own Keanu Reeves.
Oh, I love that you added Bill and Ted in there, my friend. That is amazing.
It's supposed to be a rewrite of the Bebop movie.
Yeah, press release from Anime News Network reads, after Keanu Reeves from The Matrix, Animatrix, Johnny Mnemonic, etc., told MTV News that the proposed live-action Cowboy Bebop film project is currently being rewritten. During a press event for the private lives of the Pippa Lee film, he said, and this is in my best Keanu Reeves voice, there's a draft of the script, but the writer did such a great job that in order to make the movie, you would need $500 million. This movie is fantastic, and it would cost $500 million, so he's doing a rewrite. Reeves added that the producers are just trying to pull it back in scope, and the only challenge to make a satisfying Western narrative. Whoa. Totally ran.
Bravo, man. Bravo.
$500 million. I'm like, based on past anime movies, I don't think they could get... They're lucky to get $5 million.
Yeah.
They don't have a billion.
That's a little crazy.
They're going to rewrite it and cut out...
But hey, with Keanu Reeves backing it, man, we just don't know.
I wonder how much of that $500 million goes to his cut of the money for doing the acting.
$450 million.
The only reason Keanu Reeves could ever do Spike is because, one, he has no personality, and two, he's really tall.
Awkward.
Yeah. I can just see Keanu Reeves with a green fro. That's gonna be
I was going to say, I'd like to see him with a Spike fro.
I don't want to see that. Sorry.
He kind of sort of did have a interesting pro type thing in Bill and Ted, though.
Who
would be the rest of the cast for that movie?
I want Kate Beckinsale to be Faye. I'm just saying, I would love that.
I was thinking Uma Thurman, but
Kate Beckinsale.
No.
For the win.
We got
Mr.
She's
hot.
I might agree with Kate Beckinsale.
You got Mr. T as Jet.
Yeah.
<It's> pretty much.
Your mom.
Your mom.
Who raised you?
I don't even know.
And I don't know who could play Ed. You have to just get some random hyperactive person. But
androgynous person.
Normally for these movies, I tend to think that unknown actors are better.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like, people have been like crammed into past roles. It's like, for example, the Harry Potter kid is never going to be able to do anything but Harry Potter.
He did Equus.
Yeah, but
that doesn't count.
But when
he was naked.
I
feel like there's a general consensus.
Yeah, he did porn, apparently, I guess.
Yeah, pretty
horse
much.
Porn.
With the horse.
Now when I go to sleep tonight,
you beat me to it.
I'm gonna weep myself to sleep. I'm gonna have streaks of dried tears on my face while I go to sleep.
That's uncomfortable. You should wash your face.
You should wash your mouth.
Wash your mom.
Hey, break it up. Okay. Break it up, man.
Okay, I'm good.
Moving on.
Fine.
Right, so... XTV was acquired by Funimation Entertainment to be released on DVD in 2010. For those of you who don't know, X is basically, the synopsis is, it's 1999, the end of the world is fast approaching. 15-year-old Kamui Shiro, a powerful psychic, has returned to Tokyo after a six-year absence to protect his childhood friends, Fuma and Kotori. As all prepare for Armageddon, it is Kamui's destiny to... decide the fate of the world and mankind, whether he wants the role or not.
Oh, come on. If you don't know what X has been out for 10 years, if you don't know what X is by now...
Hey, I'm just clearing the way.
Okay.
It's got such
epic
music.
Just in case, there might be one. All right.
I have a better plot summary for X.
Okay.
One episode at a time, they focus on every single character in the series until they have no time left for any plot, and then they all kill each other, and then that's the end.
Thanks.
Okay.
Spoilers.
Well, Funimation has just optioned that. And it's going to be coming out in 2010, the first DVD. And, yeah, that's pretty much it.
It's so stupid.
Hey, I'm looking forward to
it. I know you...
Next you're going to tell me Death Note doesn't have a happy ending.
But it does have a happy ending.
Sorry to break the news to you, Matt. But...
It's like...
But yes.
X already has... I mean, Funimation, is what they do is voice acting.
Well, yeah, but Funimation...
Yeah, they're damn good at it.
No, I was on their website today that they claim that they do live action stuff, too.
Funimation?
They do.
They do?
Yeah.
I'm not that... I guess I'm not that...
Trust me.
Sorry for not being as in tune with Funimation as you are.
Yeah,
no excuse.
But, like, I
don't
mean...
Don't knock the Funimation until you know the Funimation.
Okay. I mean, in 1999, they basically already did the dubbing for X with pretty much a bunch of the same types of actors that Funimation would probably choose today to do it.
Dave Wittenberg's in it. Whoops.
So why are they redoing something that's already done perfectly? I just don't get it. I mean, like, you've got Steve Bloom and actors. Well, you've got actors like Steve Bloom doing the voices of the X characters.
Well, like you said, it's a decade old.
I mean, how do you go above
it's
Steve Bloom?
It's old news, okay, Mitsugi? It's old news. Moving on.
Okay, sorry.
I'm kidding.
Ranted, and I'm done.
Okay, I guess it's my turn. I just clicked the link, sorry. Well, my news kind of goes out to all you artists out there, or wannabe artists, if you're Japanese at least, because otherwise you're going to have a hard time understanding Japanese television. There is an amazing artist named Kazuo Umezu who did the following manga. He did Drifting Classroom, Makoto-chan, and Cat-Eyed Boy. Ooh. And he's 73 years old. Call him a horror manga pioneer. And he's going to begin hosting an instructional TV series for manga drawing on November 5th.
73.
As part of the NHK educational Shumiyuyu series of tutorials on various topics for beginners.
Gotta give the guy credit, maybe 73 years old.
Maybe he can pick up on the Shin-chan where it left off.
Oh.
Someone's gotta do it.
Thanks for bringing it down.
How are little kids gonna manage living in Japan without waking up in the morning before school and being having their minds perverted by Shin-chan's ass dance?
I don't know, man.
I'm going to miss Shin-chan.
I mean, we all know that Shin-chan fills 8-year-old kids' lives with sexual references. Hopefully, realistically, he's probably not going to do Shin-chan, but is there any more of that news article?
That was all they said, unfortunately. Yeah, they were pretty short on it.
So we
said it's going to run for 8 episodes.
So it comes on when?
Starting November 5th on, of course, Japanese television. Awesome. We're kind of out of luck, but I mean...
For those of you who haven't,
what was it called again?
It's called Chukonen no Guashi Umezu Kazu no 4, Manga Nyumon,
wow.
which translates to Guashi even when you're middle aged. Kazuo Umezu's 4-panel manga primer. Because I can read.
I feel really bad. It seems like every time we do a podcast, you end up having to read a huge string of Japanese.
It's my favorite. Because
you're wearing that purple durag.
It's a bandana.
Yes, I was.
You were wearing it.
Because he said it was pink, and I asked him if he was colorblind. Moving on!
Anyway, so...
All right, Leet Street fans, this is the moment you've all been waiting for.
Woot woot!
This is the awesome Leet Street Boys interview with Matt Myers.
I'm sure I can find some really, like, fancy soundbite of people, like, cheering, like, from a crowd.
I think I have some fangirl squealing sound effects on my computer somewhere I could donate to you.
That will be wonderful and very funny.
All right, Matt, so tell me a little bit about yourself.
All right, well, my name is Matthew Myers, and I'm most well-known as the singer and songwriter from Leet Street Boys. What else would you like to know?
Whatever you want to tell me. Maybe I'll just go to the next question.
Yeah.
All right. So how long have you been a musician?
I've been a musician for a really long time. I've played piano since I was maybe in around first grade. Been writing music since an early age. I mean, you know, like everyone when they play piano when they're little, they start writing like little dippy piano songs, and I did some of that stuff and like, you know, copycat classical music. And then when I was in high school, I started listening to bands like Green Day and Nirvana, and I started writing my own songs that were all like, you know, punk and angsty and all that stuff.
We all
like everyone does when they're in seventh grade and they're a flaming ball of angst. And then I started doing musical composition for games. And I started doing that also when I kind of first got into high school. I had some friends that were trying to make RPGs using programs like QBasic. Like, the big games at the time were Final Fantasy VI and Final Fantasy VII, and, high school kids with big dreams, like, oh, we're going to make our own, big, huge RPG in our spare time, and someone's going to do the music, and, I was, like, writing songs and, like, playing games, so I was recruited by my friends to start doing that stuff. That's how I got into doing music for games. And I've been singing in band since, like, the later part of high school, maybe junior year. And that was from playing in bands, and the band I was in at the time, nobody really wanted to be the singer, and no one really stepped up to do it, and I decided to give it a try, and, it stuck, I guess.
Yeah, something like that.
I noticed that you have a lot of Final Fantasy music and references in your songs, too. Speaking of...
Oh, hell yeah. Oh, yeah.
I guess it goes back to your game roots, I guess.
What about a Buster cool. Sword limit breaking? What?
And Final Fantasy VII Overworld.
It's a cosplay prop.
Yeah. All right. So, speaking of that, when you wrote Yuri the Only One, did you honestly expect it to be such a gigantic hit among the fans?
To be totally honest, I kind of did. Or if I didn't, then I wouldn't have invested my own money producing the music video. Something about it just seemed so obvious at the time. Like, once we had that final version of the song done, when Frog sent me the mix, I was just like, oh my god. And I showed that to all my friends who were anime fans, and they were all like, oh my god. So, I mean, something about it just seemed so obvious. I just got all this encouragement to do it, and, not that the amount of money I spent is anything compared to what, major record labels spent on making music videos, but compared to the, relative to the amount of money I was making, it was kind of a risk.
Yeah.
So, obviously, I need to have a lot of faith or I wouldn't have done it. And it was just such a fun project and just so much passion the whole way through working with Nate on that. It was, like, right when I started hiring animators, I could tell right from, the first conversation with him on the phone that, like, he was excited about it as I was, and it was going to be great, and just a lot of camaraderie, even though we'd never met each other or anything like that. I remember a night kind of near the end of the project when Nate said he was going to be pulling up an all-nighter working on it. So I was like, I'm going to stay up all night and, sit here on my computer watching movies. And this way, if you've got a question at 4 in the morning, then I can be there and you can ask me and we're not going to lose any time. And I appreciate the fact that, you're busting your butt on this thing and I'm basically underpaying you to do it even though it's fun. So I want to help in any way that I can. So there's just a lot of passion going into it. And, I guess I just had a really good feeling about it through the whole project, and something about it just seemed like it was going to go the distance, and fortunately, I guess the rest is history, I guess.
Yeah. I guess that's the way to do things, you gotta put your heart into everything you do.
Yeah, especially with music, when you're not, with our stuff, where it's like, we create everything we do, it's not like we're bankrolled by a major corporation or a record label or any of that stuff that makes our content for us, and you gotta find ways to level the playing field. And at the time, I mean, the really big cliche is, bands go on MySpace and go spam everybody in the world, and I messed around with going on MySpace with a recording of the song and spamming every otaku under the sun, and that's everybody's seen that already. It's kind of annoying.
Yeah.
And we wanted to do something else to really stand out, and that's when I came up with the idea of making a music video that is inspired by, AMVs, original animation, kind of inspired by AMVs, which is obviously a big part of, anime and the anime convention community and culture. So,
there's not a single otaku out there that doesn't like or love AMVs.
Right.
Pretty much the way to do it.
Yeah. I think before we had done the video, we had explored the possibility of making some AMVs either through some contests or some sponsorship or something like that, and it just seemed like why not do the real thing, and we'd explored with that idea too. It just seemed like there was no guarantee that someone was going to make an AMV that was great enough that it was going to really do what we wanted to do. So it came about the idea of doing original animation and so on and so forth, I guess.
Well,
I guess that's about the video. I guess I should talk about the song, because that's the video. When I first wrote the song, I'll say that, the first time I wrote the song, I definitely didn't expect it to be a hit at all. I was like a local guest at Kineticon, which is an anime convention in Hartford, Connecticut, in New England, where I'm from. And I was doing these little, you know, songwriting workshops at anime conventions at the time. And I was invited to do like a little music performance with some of the other guests during the day there. And at the time, I was like, well, I want to do something cool that people would remember. So I wrote and recorded this little acoustic demo of Yuri, the Only One, that just had vocals and guitars in it. And at the time of the song, I just thought it was going to be like a one-shot deal at this convention, and people would get it, you know, get a few laughs and some amusement out of it. But yeah, I wasn't expecting anything like that from the rough version. But then when I sent it to Ryan, he was like, I want to produce another version of this, and I was kind of like, okay, whatever at the time, you know, do whatever you want to do. And then when he sent me the first mix, my jaw just dropped, and I must have spent, you know, 8 hours of that day just listening to it, being like, this is incredible. and that's when it really caught me that this could be huge.
Yeah, well, it certainly was.
Yeah, it wasn't until he really got involved and did his stuff.
Well, on that subject again, what were some of your favorite songs to write and to perform?
Obviously, Yuri, the Only One. That was the one that got it all started. That was the first one I did. It was the first one that kind of explored that idea of, you know, parodying, but also being romantic and also rocking really hard. So definitely Yuri, the Only One, just because I was, you know, laughing the whole way through writing and just coming up with all these outlandish pickup lines and funny references and things like that. It was just a really fun creative process.
Yeah.
And I'll say my second favorite one to write on the album, I'm going to say, was Rockstar Games, just because after doing Yuri, the Only One, and doing a couple other songs that were kind of the same kind of romantic comedy angle, that whole writing pattern, it's like, I've done a lot of this already, I want to try something different, and I like the idea of Rockstar Games because I kind of got to be political with it and make some points about society, and it was really fun to do in the studio, especially when we were recording all the clips from you know, people in the news talking about video games and video game violence, and doing that whole day in the studio doing that stuff just kind of left me with this feeling of like, I've done something, you know, positive here to shed some insight on a social issue that's important to gamers that people should know about and think about, and that kind of felt good.
Yeah, it's a pretty great song. Great lyrics. Thanks. I commend you.
I applaud you.
And I'm gonna say to perform, definitely Yuri, the only one again, just because it's you know, I can just stick the mic out and make the audience sing along and make them, you know, everybody, people know the words, and it's just so satisfying as a musician, as a performer, as a songwriter, to just hear a room full of people, you know, singing your song, you know, knowing all the words, so singing as loud as they can and loving it. So obviously Yuri, the Only One is just amazing to perform every time because of that. And I'm going to say, with number two, I'm going to have to go with Leaf Street Fighter, just because you're making people mosh and jump up and down and you know, break a sweat, and all this stuff is fun to do. It's fun going to rock concerts and you know, doing all that stuff. So it's fun being able to bring some of the vibe of, you know, hard rock and the mosh pit and bring that into one of our shows. I'm going to say Lee Street Fighter is a lot of fun to perform too. That's kind of what gets everybody really pumped up if they're not already.
Yeah. Okay. As a fellow musician, whenever I sit down at a piano, there are definitely one or two pieces I have to play. What are some of your favorite pieces?
When I was playing piano growing up, I used to play a lot of Chopin and stuff like that. But
I love Chopin.
Swoons.
Yeah, now, you know, I don't study piano or do any of that stuff anymore, but I started learning songs from, you know, popular anime and games just from being a fan and doing all that stuff growing up. I'll say some of my favorites are obviously a lot of stuff from the Final Fantasy series, especially Final Fantasy VII.
Yes,
Evangelion, just because I was a big fan of that show. The Pokemon theme song, just because everybody knows
it. Oh, I do that too.
Yeah, and then probably I'd say my overall favorite is I'm going to go with Eyes on Me from FF8, which I also played at my best friend's wedding when he got married.
I am totally blushing.
So, actually, but before Elite Street Boys, see, the first con I ever went to, there was one of those stories where there was, like, a piano in a little corner, and I just started playing, you know, quietly at first, just playing all the songs I knew from anime and games. And this was kind of, you know, back in maybe 2006, before, you know, you could search on YouTube and find 50,000 videos of somebody playing, you know, any of these songs. So people at the convention were really impressed with it. Oh my gosh, there's somebody at this anime convention that's, you know, knows all the songs to all these animes and is playing them on the piano and people are enjoying it. And it was a really, really big, like, a, you know, really, really powerful experience for me. So I guess, I used to do that stuff. And before Lead Street Boys, I did a lot of, you know, piano stuff in my area. And then I guess something I noticed that really makes playing the piano fun is a word advice to anybody who's a piano player at a con that wants to kind of show off. Is the thing you really want to do is interact with cosplayers. The best stuff happens, the magic happens when a cosplayer walks by and, you know, a song from the show they're in. So you just, you know, like if it's, you know, Edward Elric from Full Metal Alchemist or something like that, you just like go into Brothers.
Oh, yes. I was just about to say that too.
Oh,
I love
yes.
playing that.
If you recognize a show where they're from and you just get their attention and get them to come over to the piano, and they usually do some kind of impromptu skit and react, and it helps bring a crowd over, and everybody's amused by the fact that cosplayers are kind of performing. And the whole trick to having fun with the piano at anime conventions is that it's all about, you know, the cosplayers and the interactivity with people as they come by and they're surprised and they become part of the performance.
Yeah. I'd have to agree with that.
Got to play the crowd a little bit.
Yep.
and it's fun because I've had times where I've spent like 6 hours a day at an anime convention just sitting there playing the piano and been surrounded by like a good little crowd of cosplayers for most of that time and done stuff like that. So it's fun when it happens.
Yeah. Special moments at conventions. All right. So fans of the Leet Street Boys have grown to know and love its members, Matt, Rose, Justin, and of course, Titos. So, what gave you the idea to represent the band with these characters, and how were they all created?
That was kind of, long story short, that was basically came from bouncing ideas back and forth between the music video artist and myself, when we were doing, you know, character designs and pre-production exercises before starting the video. Oran High School Host Club was really popular at the time. I didn't even know what it was yet, but I was doing this anime songwriting panel at Anime Boston that I had a bunch of local people that are kind of famous that were there with me. I thought that this panel was going to be so big, and it was in main events. And then we had about 50 people there, and I was surprised because I was expecting like a huge, you know, huge turnout. And I was like, well, where is everybody? And of course, at the same time, was this Oran High School Host Club panel. So like every single female in the convention was at this Oran panel. So I was like, whatever this is, has to be really freaking cool. Yeah, if it just topped whatever I did.
Why is
yes. So I came up with the idea of doing, you know, inspired by Oran High School Host Club, and from doing that piano concert at the ballroom dance, I came up with the idea of doing the, because every music video on MTV has like, you know, the band performance shots in some kind of venue. So I came up with the idea of doing the performance shots at like a ballroom dance, kind of in, you know, at a prep school inspired by Oran High School Host Club. So then it would follow the song is all about, you know, otaku dating and anime dating and impressing fangirls and all that stuff like that. So, I started thinking about things like what kind of girls or what kind of guys rather are, you know, stereotypical, you know, anime fangirls attracted to. But obviously the big one that came to mind is like the angsty emo, you know, prep school punk type, like the Cloud Stripes and the Sasuke's and guys like that always have tons of fangirls. So that was kind of a no-brainer. Plus I've been in emo bands before, and the song kind of lent itself to that. Like, you know, the song was kind of spoofing that whole genre to begin with. And then I used to be in a band with this guy who was like 6'5", like just this ridiculous athlete. Like he could look like one of these guys that could jump over your head if he wanted to. Like he's a Broadway dancer now. And we always did well at show. We always did really well when we performed live together, just because I was like this angsty, brainy little punk, and he was like this big, pompous, athletic, confident dude. I guess kind of the contrast played really well, and I saw that at the time. So I kind of the Justin character was sort of based on him and kind of our relationship together in that band, as sort of like the athletic, confident type, and We basically made Justin as like a metrosexual elf was kind of the character design. I think the first time Nate drew a concept art, he just looked like, you know, like a Keebler elf or some whatever, and I was like, no, he's got to be way more metroed out. Like, I think I said something like, make this guy so arrogant that you just want to punch him in the face. And then you know, we changed the costume design and got you really upplayed the whole make him as arrogant as possible thing, and that worked. So that's how Justin came about, and then with DDoS playing the drum, it was kind of that didn't take much thought. It was like, hey, how cool would it be to have a badass heavy metal inspired Green Dragon playing on the drum, like a freaking summon spell or something like that.
Oh yeah.
So that didn't take too much thought. That was like do it once and we're done kind of thing. Yeah, the first time Nate did Matt too, he looked too nice. I think I made some comment to him like he's got to look make him. What did I say? Nate was here to remember. Yeah, he looked. I think I said he was too nice. He's got something like make him angsty, but not angsty enough to scare away 13-year-old girls. I think is what I said.
13-year-old girls love angsty.
but not like axe murder angsty. Angsty like So I said something like that. With Matt, that was one that took a couple tries. Justin took a couple tries, and then Rose took a couple tries too. That was kind of the idea. There's first of all, we've got the song about Yuri. There's got to be a lesbian in there somewhere.
Yes.
It's like,
what?
And then also comes the idea. Well, you look at what girls are, what kind of guys, anime fan girls are attracted to. It's some of them like little angsty punk. Some of them like big hunky jock types. Some of them like strong silent types or dragons or anthropomorphics or whatever you want to call.
Furries.
Those types of things, yeah, sure. But it's also a very gay and bi friendly community with things like Yaoi and Yuri and all that stuff like that, and a lot of girls I know are anime fans are either bi or gay, so why not have a lesbian in the band? So Rose came up with the idea.
Why the hell not?
So Rose came up with the idea of being a lesbian healer.
Sweet. I knew I liked her. Okay.
So that's basically how we got the characters. It was just kind of just a lot of conversations going back and forth and comparing them to characters from other popular anime and other popular TV shows and movies and things like that and like high school stereotypes and all that stuff and just settling on designs that we thought made sense. And then we also focused on like in that video like the boy and like the otaku boy and girl that we're chasing after each other the whole way through and designing those characters too.
Cool. All right, we're dying to know. What's your favorite anime series?
The first anime series I was really obsessed with, like to an unhealthy amount, I'd say was Evangelion. That's one of those shows you need to like see a shrink after you watch. Yeah. I mean, it's a wonderful show. It's one of these shows where it really just messes with your head. Also, I'm definitely going to have to say Ouran High School Host Club is another huge favorite of mine. Obviously, Yuri, the one who's kind of helped on the back of that show and was kind of inspirational to Leaf Street Boys. So definitely Ouran High School Host Club. Say honorable mentions include shows like Death Note, Full Metal Alchemist. My favorite manga is the Kenichi Case Files, which I'll talk about later. A lot of my taste in anime kind of conforms to a lot of shows my friends also like, and usually it's like all my friends start watching something and I don't know what they're talking about, and after like everybody I know has seen, it's like, all right, I've got to know what the hell these people are talking about just so that I can keep up with the times and carry on a conversation and all that stuff. And my channel is to follow along the lines of what's popular a lot of the time, even though that's kind of conformist and lame. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of good,
That was back when anime was good.
Oh, the good old days.
We'll discuss that later.
Yeah, we will. Okay, so do you have any memorable fan encounters?
Short answer, all of them. I mean, fans have just been really, really great. I mean, if you're a musician and you don't appreciate your fans and you don't show them that you care about them, then you're not doing your job. So, I mean, every time a fan tells me that Leaf Street Boys is their favorite band, it's like, wow, this is something I never expected, and there's really no higher compliment you can get from any music fan than saying, you guys are my favorite band. I mean, that's something special right there.
It's gonna make you feel good.
So what?
I said it's gonna make you feel good inside.
Yeah. It's wonderful and very rare, because there's hundreds of thousands or millions of bands out there, and of all the bands that have ever existed and existed now, if we're their favorite band, then that's something special. We've seen lots of crazy things. We've seen lots of fan art. Elite Street Boys fan art is amazing. Fan fiction.
Slash.
Fan fiction.
There's been fan fiction. People doing like covers of our songs has been really cool. AMVs, cosplayers. It's fun at conventions getting like the deer, you know, when somebody, because you know, like, it's animated, so you know, I can walk around and nobody's really gonna know what I look like, because I'm not, you know, if I'm just dressed normally and hang out with my friends, especially at conventions where I'm not a guest or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's funny when someone's like, oh my god, like, you're the singer of Bleach Street Boys. They just give me like the deer in the headlights look. That's really, and I'm just like, hi, you know, let's be friends, you know.
Best moment.
It's really funny getting those kinds of looks, like, you know, you're famous, or, you know, being treated like you're famous. And one of the things that's fun about like anime convention famous is that I think most people that are guests at conventions know is that, you know, inside the walls of the convention, people treat you like you're a rock star and it's great. But outside of the convention, you walk down the street two blocks, nobody knows who the hell you are anymore, and it's kind of very. Very, 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 very sheltered in the convention community, and you know, you don't have, like, you know, tabloids and paparazzis and all that nonsense following you around or any of that stuff like that. And people are really cool. So it's kind of cool how you can kind of just, you know, go in and out of being, you know, so called famous and just being a regular person on the street or whatever, and without any of that kind of stigma attached. And then obviously the things like signing autographs and playing and you know, doing shows has always been great. Fun things I've signed have been obviously stuff like album shirts and programs, books like you'd expect. Musical instruments, both real instruments like guitar, like real, you know, guitars. Like, I think it was a con where someone had us sign like a $700 Fender Stratocaster guitar, which was pretty amazing. And then things like, you know, signing things like Rock Band and Guitar Hero instruments, we have to sign those. I've signed Nintendo DS's and PSP's. There was one convention we did last year too, where in the dealer's room they had these big like Yaoi paddles and Yuri paddles that everyone was buying, like wooden paddles.
Uh-huh.
And people were buying the Yuri paddles and having me autograph them. So underneath the word Yuri, I wrote "the only one." and I must have signed about 50 of those over the course of the convention. So, I mean, fans have just been great. You know, 99% of fans' experience have just been, like, really great people that I try to stay in touch with and be friends with, and you know, people I wish I'd known, you know, when I was younger, and you know, watching anime as a fan and all that stuff for the first time. You know, it's all good. That's basically all I can say about it.
Cool. All right, any quick shout-outs for the fans?
Sure, shout out to the fans. All our fans listening and checking out the podcast on our website, which is www.leetstreetboys.com with E's, www.leetstreetboys.com. Check out our website. You know, we got a webcomic there. We've got your blog and things updated all the time. You know, that's the place to go with most current, up-to-date stuff about us. You know, what conventions we're playing at, all that stuff like that. And then of course all the fans in Florida, both here at your school and anyone else listening from Florida that, you know, is a fan of our music. We haven't done a show down there yet. We hope to be able to do one in the next year. So with your help, you know, hopefully we can make that happen.
Well, we certainly have a lot of cons down here.
Yeah, we do.
That's for sure.
Yeah. So you know, if you want to see us at a convention near you, as I always say, write to the convention fan or write to the convention staff. Usually it's guest relations is the appropriate person to contact, and then just request us as a musical guest. They're going to be getting tons of press releases from us and from all kinds of bands and all kinds of guests and all kinds of performers. If you want to bring us, then that's how you do it.
All right. We'll get on it, man. Good plan.
I'm one step ahead of the game. I already did it. Okay. Well, thanks for that, Matt.
Yeah, thanks for letting us interview.
You're welcome.
Yes.
That's insightful too, I think.
Yeah.
Very much.
Hey,
so.
I learned stuff. That was awesome. And I thought I was a fangirl.
We have just recharged the fangirl batteries. Anyway, so listeners, Chiaki just dialed in very randomly from Japan. So say hello, Chiaki.
Hi, world. I'm sorry I'm late. I had that thing called class, because when it's morning for me, it's evening for these guys.
What you mean by classes? making pots.
I also had Japanese speaking class. Thank you very much.
Okay. Anyway, so aside from Chiaki joining us, the biggest news...
By the way, formally, hi, Matt.
Hey, Chiaki.
Okay, sorry. I had to be a momentary fangirl.
Okay.
Yay.
There's more than one of me.
We all.
So I guess the biggest news happening in Japan right now in the anime world is that, thank God, the summer season just ended. And what a horrible anime season it was. There are about 3 animes over the summer that were worth watching at all, and only like 2 that were worth finishing. But we'll get to that later. So the new anime season starts on Thursday. They're gonna air a total of 11 animes on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday in Japan. And the ones that are airing on the 1st are Nyan Koi, Camphor, and Ostara Crying 2. And Nyan is basically the onomatopoeic word for a cat meow. So you can, and Koi means love. So you can kind of just like assume what that one's about. And I already talked about how Ostara Crying 2 isn't going to be very good. But
actually, I think Nyan Koi is about a guy who's afraid of cats.
Yep, it
anyways,
is.
Go.
Well, okay, whatever. On October 2nd, Seito Kai to Ichizon, To Aru Kogaku no Reogan, and Totakau Shishio, the Book of Bantora, all start. So in case you've been waiting for any of these animes, you can finally jump on board with them.
Book of Bantora sounds cool.
And on October 3rd, Letter B, The Sacred Blacksmith, The Final Act of Inuyasha, and I can't believe it.
Finally!
It's been like 8 years. Tentai...
It has an ending!
Yeah, right.
Watch it not really be an ending.
Yeah.
Tentai Senshi...
Is it Kiss?
And Kotatsu Neko.
Just barely.
So...
We kissed before.
I guess it's kind of interesting how out of the 11 animes I just mentioned, 2 of them are about cats.
I also want to let all the listeners know that I posted, I think yesterday my time, which is today your time, weird, that the new season of anime, because the list that was posted on the forums originally, it's been extended, and the new list that I posted also has release dates. So it's under general anime discussion, just letting all the listeners know that I think it's like the final type list, so since it has release dates.
Yay, Chiaki!
So we're going to be covering all, between the 4 of us, we've pretty much got every anime for the fall blanketed, and so in the coming, I'd say next 6 weeks, you can probably pretty much hear about every single anime that you're going to be watching up through February.
True.
So stay tuned for all kinds of awesome anime news, and hopefully you can find out which animes are worth watching and which ones aren't, so you don't burn your eyes out or try to off yourself or et cetera, et cetera. So since we don't have actually any new anime to discuss, we're going to have to go right into our review section again, and Matt has an interesting anime that I have never seen or heard of, called Kindaichi Case Files, but after looking it up, seems like it's... I probably should know about it by now, but... So I'm looking forward to your review, Matt.
Yeah, you're actually right. A lot of people here in the U.S. don't know about it. I found out about it just flipping through a bunch of manga at a con someone in Artist Alley was selling and being like, ooh, this looks cool, but I'd never heard of it before that at all. But when I've spoken with people with our guitarist who's from Japan, and other people I meet that's from Japan... It's a show, and it's a manga and a show that everybody over there really knows very well. It was a very, very, very big hit there about 10 years ago. Kodachi Case Files is basically a really great anime and manga for fans of, like, the murder mystery genre, like Sherlock Holmes.
Here, here.
Yeah, like, Agatha Christie, all that kind of stuff.
Right.
Basically, the way the plot always is there's a high school boy who's a great detective who's the descendant of a grandfather who's like this world renowned detective, and somehow he gets transported to some exotic location with his friend Miyuki, and the body count starts rising. Somebody gets killed. He starts investigating, and there's somebody's the killer, and he's got to figure out who it is before the murder gets away with it. And it's always in, you know, fun exotic locations like mansions or, you know, isolated on an island or up in the mountains and all kinds of, you know, creepy horror type locations. They usually think that the killer is like something supernatural is going on in the beginning before he figures it out.
So is this anime like, is it relatable to Detective Conan at all? Because it seems like I can only think of really a couple animes that are about detectives.
I don't think it's related. No, I mean I don't think it's related. Every show is or manga is very self-contained, where you don't really need to know the story of the others to be able to you know jump in with one, because it's all like just one murder mystery that happens, and like you know who the detective is, you kind of know what's going to happen, and there isn't really like it's fun because you can just kind of start somewhere in the middle of the series without really missing anything from seeing an earlier one, and just because of the plot structure.
Yeah, just looking at the episode titles, it seems like it's broken down into like 4 or 5 episode story arcs, with each one being a separate mystery, I suppose. I guess is that accurate?
Well, yeah, the episodes it takes about four or five episodes to do a full mystery, and each manga is a full mystery.
Right. It looks really
does.
And it's not that old either, so I'm tempted to download.
Yeah.
Me too.
So I'd recommend anyone that likes the murder mystery genre, you know, Sherlock Holmes, Agatha Christie,
sure.
You know, whodunits, all that stuff.
I'm on it.
So
if
you had to give this anime a rating out of 5, what would you give it?
Oh, definitely a 5. It's my favorite.
It's your favorite, all right.
Cool.
Well, there it is.
Oh, dear.
Keen Daiichi Case Files. It looks like it's got I kind of like the way the animation is drawn too, just from looking at some of the images from it. So, Keen Daiichi Case Files.
Yeah, the manga is great too. As always, when the show is good.
All right, so I've got a couple from the last season that just ended. First anime that I'm going to talk about is Tokyo Magnitude 8.0, because we covered it a couple months ago on the podcast, but it's brand new, and we had only seen a couple episodes of it at that point, and we were pretty positive about it, right, Chiaki, back when the first couple episodes first came out?
Well, yeah, I mean, it was a really original concept. I mean, how many other earthquake episodes have you seen?
Yeah, there aren't that many animes about earthquakes, but, you know,
intriguing.
The problem with Tokyo Magnitude was that they have the earthquake right at the first episode, and really the problem that I was worried about it, and my fears came to pass, was that it kind of runs out of steam. Like, by the 5th episode, you're basically, like, falling asleep. They spend episodes 4 through 12 or 11 or however long it was just walking home through all, like, the destroyed Tokyo. And, you know, there's, like, all kinds of, you know, horrible, you know, people have lost their families and things like that. But really, it's just not that interesting after like, the first 2 episodes. You know, they kind of sprinkle shockwaves of the earthquake in there throughout the episodes, but really nothing ever really happens after the first 2 episodes, and so it was kind of...
I want to add, I know this is Mitsugi's review, and I'm not trying to steal it, because I never actually finished it, but I think I got through, what, maybe like episode 7, would you say?
Probably like more like episode 4.
Really? Not that I got farther than that.
Okay, episode 7.
Okay, well, whatever. I got a couple episodes past what he was saying, the initial, like, oh my god, it's a big earthquake. And I was kind of hoping, like, after they got that out of the way, I kind of got the impression when they first started showing, like, you know, the relief and how people were acting toward each other, that they would, I thought it would be maybe more of a commentary of how people act in times of crisis. But I really didn't see that. And I just wanted to say that so that if anyone else was thinking the same kind of thing that I was, you're not going to get that from it.
I found that it did have little bits of that sprinkled in towards the end. It had people helping each other, you know, and the whole people coming together to overcome a conflict. But really, it was kind of not what I think most people that watch an earthquake anime were hoping for. So
yeah.
I'm going to give it 3 earthquakes out of 5, just because it was all right. It had a very original concept, but it was rather boring. I mean, it had the same type of animation that Denno Coil had, but which was pretty good, but overall, it was kind of a dull series, and I was a little bit disappointed with it.
Good to know.
The second anime is significantly better, and we talked about this one also, but it was also very early when we talked about it. Spice and Wolf 2 is the follow-up on a series that came out a couple years ago about a guy named Lawrence Craft who finds a wolf girl deity in his wagon, his merchant trading wagon. And the series, at least starting from the second series, the story is about trying to take her back to her home village, where she comes from. And of course, Spice and Wolf's really a love story. And it's kind of one of those love stories where you're just begging for them to kiss and, you know, hook up because it's
sexual frustration.
It's ridiculously obvious, you know, at this point. I mean, they go into how there's stories about men and gods mating, you know, and things like that. And you know that they're just hinting at it, you know.
Just my stuff.
But it was kind of, I mean, it's a very interesting story. It's done very well. It has a lot of atmosphere, just like the first Spice and Wolf. You know, Horo is very cute. She's like one of the cutest anime characters, I think, that are out there, bar none. Mm. You know, Lawrence Craft's a pretty likable character. He's very smart. You get to kind of be in on his merchant trading and some of the intricacies of economics and stuff like that. So the anime takes a very different approach, but it also doesn't cover much. I mean, when the series ends, not only they haven't taken Horo home, you know, like the first and second season, they failed to accomplish the one thing that they set out to do. And I honestly think that they accomplished a lot less in the second season than they did in the first season. At least the first season, they were talking about how the church was trying to stop her from leaving her home village and things like that. So Spice and Wolf 2 is all right, but it was a little bit pointless.
Oof.
I mean, it's very cute. It has love in it. They kind of hook up, but they don't really. I give
That's
it.
So frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I give it 3.5 silver coins out of 5. I really like Spice and Wolf, but you know, I really wanted them to actually do something in the series rather than just, you know, mess around a little bit and end up right where they started. Basically, the whole series felt like one filler episode. Because where it starts and ends, they have basically moved nowhere, which is kind of sad.
Sad day.
Okay, so I'm done. Your turn.
Okay, so I decided to bring up an
yaoi.
Oldie. It's not yaoi.
Yaoi.
It's maybe a little bit.
Yaoi.
Okay, maybe it's a little bit of yaoi. But it was my first anime, surprisingly.
Oh, that's so cute.
Aside from the standard DBZ and Sailor Moon and Yu-Gi-Oh! And Pokemon.
We actually have Descendants of Darkness DVDs in our prize box at the Anime Club.
I noticed. You don't have disc 2, which is the best disc, but 1, 3, and 4.
That's a bummer.
I'll have the greatest antagonist ever.
Well,
so.
It was in the box last year, too, so maybe somebody bought one of them.
Maybe
somebody
actually
did, actually.
No. But anyway, Descendants of Darkness.
Stole it.
Also called Yami no Matsui. And it is interesting, to say the least. It's about the this organization called the Judgment Bureau that deal with the souls of those who have died in violent deaths, be them murders or suicides, and either leads them beyond or figures out why they haven't passed on, things like that. You know, your standard Shinigami sort of
so Bleach
job, only without the action-packedness,
without
I guess.
The Dragon Ball Z.
Without the Dragon Ball Z and the Bleach and the everything else that exists. But maybe, I think this one might have come first, actually. But,
Definitely.
I guess. Alright.
Bleach is still running.
Bleach is, why is it still running?
And it's like 300 episodes already.
It's crazy. I couldn't make it past the first season. I really couldn't. But anyway, so moving on. I think it's worth watching, if only just because it's a different style of that horror sort of anime that goes around. Lots of violence. Not like Berserk kind of violence, but like still a lot of blood. And
so you don't have one man killing 100 people?
No. One man killing 100 people, just not as bluntly.
Just not like ripping their bodies in half.
He's killing them in secret. But you've got your
ninja
characters. Woohoo! Meraki, who's the antagonist, who's creepy as hell. And then you've got the main two characters, Suzuki and Hisoka, who were voiced by two brilliant voice actors, Dan Green, who did the voice of Yugi in Yu-Gi-Oh, which is quite a switch.
Why am I so comfortable and then, in leather?
And then Liam O'Brien, who does many an amazing character everywhere. He was an incredible voice actor. He was. He had one line in that. But yes, so there are a couple of things to watch out for, like the violence I said before.
Like the yaoi.
And the yaoi.
I gotta ask for clarity.
Yes.
Is it just like under and some overtones of yaoi, or is it like straight up yaoi?
Definite overtones. There is one scene that they play twice throughout the entire, I think it's 13 episodes, that's like a silhouette of something that happened. But other than that...
Okay, we'll leave it, yeah. Well, we just had a hentai episode, so we don't need to have too much descriptiveness.
No, it's not really. It's a
bicycle. Save it for 15.5.
Save it for 15.5, people. Come on.
But yes, no. All in all, I'd give it a 3.5 Shinigami out of 5.
Interesting.
So, it's worth it, but it's still a little frightening for some people.
Oh.
Interesting like shocks. For, like homophobes. Interesting shock for a first anime, though. I will give it that much.
Yeah, but generally, I think if you haven't watched an anime before, you might not want to watch an anime that has the word darkness in the title.
You might or not dark. Want to watch an anime that just could be mistaken for a hentai.
The only other anime I can think of that has dark the word love. Dark in the title is Darker Than Black, which is
dark
not
love.
Good.
Dark love.
Love, which is a hentai, and Dark Side Blues, which is definitely not something you should watch as a first time.
I feel like I know something else that begins with dark and
so,
is bad. So.
As a, well, there's probably 100 other animes, but... So, as a rule, what have we learned?
Never watch pictures with darkness in the title first.
Yes. Otherwise, your mind will become dark like Kimiko's.
Trust me, you don't want to see that, guys.
Insert evil grin here.
Insert.
You can't see her, but she looks pretty maniacal right now. I'm kind of scared.
I've got the whole
move away
thing and everything.
All right, so Chiaki, you learned about a rare anime.
So I'm taking an anime class. Yes, I am taking a class and getting a grade and getting credit on anime.
I am so jealous.
A bunch of BS.
And
I'm studying business law and you're doing anime. That's great.
The first movie we watched is a movie called Angel's Egg. It's circa 1985, so this is a true retro review. It is by a director, you might know him, named Mamoru Oshii. He's done things, the biggest things that most people will know is probably he's done Blood and All the Ghosts in the Shell. He's done a ton of other things, but those are really, you know, his big works that people are going to recognize. Oshii was working on a big project with a company, and he kind of broke off because he really wanted... Essentially, he felt like what he was doing for this company was essentially creating generic anime, like the same formula over and over and over again, and he didn't want to do that. And so he broke off to create Angel's Egg, which is a really intellectually difficult piece. Like, it's very symbolic, it's very, very mind-boggling, and I'm gonna straight out say, I can tell you the entire story of this anime and not spoil any of it, because it doesn't have a clear plot or a clear ending. Everyone interprets it how they're supposed to. And she actually been quoted to say that that's how he wants it.
So because it's like Hamlet's Renmei.
I haven't seen that, but maybe. Like, Oshii has actually said that he would rather have less of a following, but have people who really watch and analyze and think about his films, than to have really popular films that gross tons of money but have no substance to them.
Wise man.
So, this anime on News Network, I looked it up because I wanted to see how they describe plot, and it has a lot of bad ratings, and I just want to say that I think it gets a lot of flack. That's one of the reasons, because don't expect to go into this and not have to put in some thought. The other thing I want to say is that because it's so old and rare, you're probably not even going to be able to find a subtitled copy, but you can get your hands on the script, and the entire script for the whole 71-minute movie is 1.5 pages.
Wow.
So
how does that work out?
No, I was really surprised too, but it's very minimal. Every bit of dialogue is intended for a purpose. There's no extra words in the entire movie. And it's essentially the story. In the beginning, you see who's known as... there's no names. So I'm going to call him the Wanderer. Some call him the Warrior because he carries this cross-shaped object, almost like the original wolf would, on his shoulder. And some people interpret it as a weapon. So some call him the Warrior. I prefer to call him the Wanderer. That's my interpretation. So you see him, and then you see this giant orb with these Greek-like statues descending from the sky. And then it switches over to show you a day in the life of a girl. And
no.
What?
There's an anime about the day in the life of a girl.
Well, this is the opening. And the girl carries this egg, and she looks like she might be, like, 14, but...
Wait a second. Does the egg... I got it. She gets transported into another world, and the egg hatches into the Razafon.
Yes. How did you know?
The Sengon?
Pretty much every anime about a girl is where she gets sucked into another world.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
She carries this egg around underneath her dress, almost like she's pregnant.
Oh.
And she carries it around with her everywhere, and she has this thing where she has jars, and she fills up jars with water. And eventually, the Wanderer and the girl meet. And the only thing that they really ever say to each other is, "Who are you? Who are you?" type of thing. And it's really... I know I'm doing a really bad job of explaining it, but like I said, it's so laden with symbolism that you really just have to watch it, because the story, it's essentially, my interpretation is it's essentially a retelling of Noah's Ark. Because at this time, Oshii was actually going to go into the seminary, but at this time he left. He had a disenfranchisement. He was disenfranchised with Christianity. So think about that too when you watch the movie. But it has a really surprising ending, and like my professor has seen it now like 10 times, and this time he said he still saw things that were new. So that's the kind of movie it is. Also, just two other things I want to say about this movie. I know I could go on for like a whole thing. We talked for an hour and a half on this. But it's a ganime style, and ganime is something, it's taken from the character ga, which means illustration or to paint. It's the character. And then nime, like anime, animation. And it means that it's a very limited animation style. The camera does a lot of panning and zooming, and there's not a lot of frames or cells, but it focuses more on interpreting like artwork. And Yoshitaka Amano did the artwork for this, and Amano has done work for tons of things, but something that people might know him best for is Vampire Hunter D and the concept artwork for Final Fantasy. So the artwork is a treat. Amano does other ganime. If you're interested in that, we could even have another discussion on it. But I'm going to give Angel's Egg 4.5 jars of water out of 5. But go into it expecting minimal animation and having to really think. Because if you don't, then you're going to hate it.
Well, based on the way anime goes right now, I think that's probably asking a little too much for people growing up on moe anime.
Oh, moe.
But for those of you that...
I'd say it's refreshing.
But for those of
you... Oh, you shouldn't.
For those that grew up in a time where anime actually required you to have a brain.
Ava, cough, cough. Oh, wait, that's a farce, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. We'll go into that another time.
Moving on.
Yeah, let's not talk about that now. Well, thanks for listening, guys. You know how to find us by now, but I'm going to tell you anyway. You can
spoon feed it and shovel it down your throat.
Yeah, it's a little graphic.
Not as graphic as episode 10.5.
Yeah, but that's a different story.
All right. Still having nightmares.
You will be for another month.
Things you can't unsee.
Or unhear, in this case. Okay. Well, you can find us at aaapodcast.com, iTunes, Feedburner,
Mevio,
Facebook.
And we have a forum.
Tired of listing these off.
So please join the forum and be friends with us because we love you.
We're going to close things up with Fly Me to the Moon, which is originally sung by Frank Sinatra, but this version is sung by Claire. And it's the ending theme of Evangelion. So, all right. Thanks for listening, guys.
Talk to you guys soon.
Bye, guys.